Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Dr. Amy Killen, and I could not be more excited for you to hear this episode. And part of the reason is that we are discussing a topic that we have not touched on at all so far on this podcast, and that is the bi-directional relationship of your sexual health and your sleep health. And so some of you might be like, of course, yes, this is so connected. And others, you know, might say, what? How in the world are those topics connected and certainly bidirectional? So don't you worry. We will get into all those details and more. I think you're going to really enjoy this. But first, want to just let you know a little bit about our guest. So again, Dr. Amy Killen is an anti-aging and regenerative physician specializing in sexual optimization, aesthetics, and longevity medicine. Board certified in emergency medicine with 10 years of ER experience, Dr. Killen saw the impact of unchecked chronic disease and disability from the front lines before transitioning to anti-aging and regenerative medicine. An international speaker, clinical practice owner, medical director of the National Regenerative Medicine Physician Training Course, author, and frequent media guest, Dr. Killen has become an outspoken advocate for empowering patients to look and feel their best by merging lifestyle modification, hormone optimization, and personalized medicine and regenerative therapy. I know that you're going to really enjoy this episode. Now, before we get into the podcast, I do want to take a quick minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, or as I like to call it, a therapist in your pocket. It's the exact app that I used when I was going through my really challenging period of insomnia while traveling overseas. And the ability to maintain a consistent therapist in real life was just really not an option for me since we were jumping around from country to country. So the ability to, with using my phone, have video calls weekly with my therapist, I was paired with I connected with a great therapist right off the bat, but I do know other people who have been able to kind of shop around with some of the therapists on that app until they find a great fit for them. And in between those calls, one of the things that I found was really helpful is that you can also send voice notes, text messages, images in between that, you know, longer weekly video call so that you do have this really very real ongoing connection and support that I certainly, at least in my experience, hadn't felt with real life therapists that I had used in the past. And also the pricing structure is much more competitive than a lot of the real life therapists that you can come into contact with. So I found it to be a lot of benefits. I recommend it to a lot of people that are just kind of going through struggles in their life or just simply want to be able to up level and bring in that level of reflection and awareness into their life about what's both working and not working. And you can certainly cancel at any time. And for our sleepy community, the BetterHelp company has hooked us up with 10% off if you go to betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill. Again, betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill. And welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. I'm so grateful that you were able to take the time to speak with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. So I know that there's going to be a lot of information for us to cover today, but I think we can start with hearing a bit of your story and how certainly your work relates to our continued quest, at least on this podcast, to continually look at and improve our sleep.
I'm Dr. Amy Killen, and I am an anti-aging and regenerative physician. I specialize, I'm specialized in sex and skin. So sex is a big part of my practice. I do a lot of work with integrative medicine and regenerative medicine and just trying to help people have, improve improve sex lives. And sexual longevity is a big piece as well, working with people as they get older to try to stay sexually healthy and then using that as a way to stay kind of generally healthy. So that's kind of my short version. I've been doing this specific thing for the last 7 or 8 years. And before that, I was an ER doctor. So if you want to talk about lack of sleep, I can go down that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, you guys are pros.
And that was actually funny because one of the things that made me decide to leave the emergency department after many years was I had three kids towards the end of that within a couple of years and was, you know, just sleeping so erratically and so horribly. And after many years of that, decided that I just couldn't handle it anymore. So I decided to leave the ER. But so sleep was actually one of the big reasons for that. But I've been doing what I've been doing now for the last 8 or so years. And it's very different from the ER, but I love it so much.
Oh, that's amazing. Wow, what a story. And isn't that interesting too, how sleep can play such a factor and a role into oftentimes needing to really change the course or the direction of our lives when that is not working. There's nothing that will make you move faster when that continues to just be an area that's just not fulfilling on what we need. So I totally hear that. And you know, partly how I'd been connected with you is a few people had sent me your Instagram, which is fantastic. And so we'll share in the show notes too, to make sure people can follow you there. And you give a lot of information too around certainly sex and its relationship to sleep and how they're both, you know, kind of coexist, serving each other. So I'd love to dive in a bit more in how people can make that connection of how those two are interconnected.
Yeah, they're very much interconnected. In fact, it's funny. There was a study done, I think in 2017 in the UK, where they were looking at, you know, what makes people essentially feel good and what contributes to just general wellness. And that they were looking at everything from how much money you make to, you know, to sleep and sex and various things. And what they found was actually that sleep and sex were the two most important things when it came to creating a sense of well-being. Like above everything else, above how much money you make, above, you know, your relationship status. Like it was sleep first, actually, and it was sex second. So the two of those things are so important, and they're very much intertwined. The way that, you know, sex affects how you sleep, and how you sleep affects your sex life. And it's this sort of snowball effect that goes back and forth. So I feel like the two of those are like little best friends.
I love that. Those are little best friends. And it's so funny too, because, you know, I'll be working with clients and people will have, you know, difficulty in kind of creating a solid evening routine and just what do I even do with myself if I'm not on all the tech and the lights and the, you know, phone and all the things. And when I will kind of controversial, it lands often for many people controversially of bringing up this topic. And even if they're single, of kind of, you know, self-pleasure and all those topics, it can really get murky. So I'm so glad that you're helping to bring this into the forefront, lose kind of the weirdness around the topic and really get into the nitty-gritty of the why and the science of, you know, how interconnected this is. And actually, again, one of the conversations that we had connected over was this great Instagram post that you had put up of someone sharing about how when they started mouth taping before bed, that they were now waking up with nocturnal erections again. Yay, exclamation. And so I know that's a loaded topic, literally, but I'm wondering if we could, you know, just, I know we're going a lot of directions, but if we could just even point to how this is, that this is so linked up. So the quality of your sleep, then, you know, fulfilling on the quality of your sex life and vice versa. So if we can unpack a little bit of this, that would be great.
Yeah, so there's so many components to it. Yes. So first of all, the mouth taping story was funny because it's one of my colleagues, and we were actually in the procedure room doing a procedure with there's five of us in there, like a whole staff of people, and my colleague who knows I'm really interested in sexual medicine, you know, he just comes out and was like, hey, so I started mouth taping and I started having all these erections again and it's fantastic, and so I was like, oh my gosh, really, tell me. And so we had this whole conversation, you know, like mid procedure, which is how I loved it. But we believe that when you have a healthy sex life, that it improves your sleep. And the reason I say believe is because unfortunately it's actually kind of difficult to do these studies. There have been studies done. There's definitely a research that shows that couples who have sex like at night before bed, for instance, they say that they sleep better. They say that it takes less time to get to sleep, and they say that they actually sleep more soundly. And some of this is just kind of, their self-reporting on that, because most of this was done before we had like Oura rings and things like that, where we could actually just non-invasively look at our sleep. So the things that have been, they're out there, they're having to do all kinds of crazy tests back in the old days. But even the self-reporting is, you can look at it and people are generally feeling like if they have a good sexual experience before bed, then they sleep better. And there's a lot of reasons for that, probably, that we know that with men, especially, they release a hormone called prolactin during orgasm. That is very, it makes you very sleepy. And so that's, I'm sure that most guys, they could tell you that they have an orgasm and they get really tired right afterwards. And they may not stay asleep for very long, but they at least get kind of drained for a few minutes. With women, the estrogen that is released is thought to actually improve the REM portion of your sleep and to kind of strengthen the REM portion of your sleep. And then you also, we both release oxytocin, which is sort of a bonding hormone and kind of like cuddly hormone and like, let's just cuddle up in our blankets and relax kind of hormone. And that's, happens during sex as well. And even with masturbation, there's research, a little bit of research into whether or not sort of self-pleasure before going, right before bed, is that helpful for sleeping? And it's funny, I was just reviewing a paper yesterday before we came on here today. I have to read you this because it's so funny.
Yes, please.
So I have it ready for you. So they took these five women, five men, and they had them do different things. So some of them would read for 15 minutes and then go to sleep. One group was like, kind of self-pleasuring, but not going all the way to orgasm. And then they would go to sleep. And then the other group would do like the whole thing with orgasm. And they were trying to see, is there a difference? Like, can we say that something is causing improvements in ability to get to sleep as well as, stay asleep? And so at the end of the study, so it was a small group, they said that they didn't really see a lot of differences and they weren't really seeing a lot of improvements necessarily in sleep latency and the ability to get to sleep. However, so they said, the presence of the researcher having to remove the anal probe following orgasm may have delayed participants' sleep latency.
Oh my God, what a nice asterisk.
These are the kind of before like all the technology that we have now, like they actually had to put like probes and things like inside of people to see, are they having an orgasm? Are they asleep? Like they're doing all the, crazy EEGs on the head. And so the data is limited on that. But I think that there's a lot of, especially now that we have, all these technologies that can actually track our sleep, as well as technologies that can even track how strong your orgasms are. There's vibrators and things like Lion that can do that. So I think we have the tools now to do it better.
We do. Yes. First of all, I'm so glad you came prepared with that awesome example. And second of all, and you're so right. And it's a very exciting time because I'll also share anecdotally, I'm sure my boyfriend will love me sharing the story, but one gadget that I've been loving is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Leaf, but it's so right. So you put it on and it's almost like a continuous glucose monitor, but for your HRV. And I have noticed so far in my time of using it that post-orgasm, the HRV will really, my HRV numbers will really improve. I've also had a few HRV experts on the podcast and pointing to, and we really didn't thoroughly explore this enough. That's why I'm so glad to have you on here, of the impact for orgasm on our heart rate and on our HRV. So that's another kind of quantifiable way to take a look at that. But so you're so right. And I know this is a big topic and we're kind of going in a bunch of directions of how beneficial it can be. But I think going back to this topic around, even if we go back to say like the mouth taping example, I think many people are surprised to understand how that can link up. And can you further just parse out a bit of like, why is that connected? Why would that help with erections? Just taking that as one example.
Yeah, so mouth taping is interesting. And I've only just recently learned about it. People have been telling me about it for years, but I didn't really understand the connection. But one of the hormones, or one of the chemicals, not a hormone, but one of the chemicals that's really important for erections, for both men and women, we both have erections, is nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is the main chemical messenger that tells your blood vessels to vasodilate, so to open up, so to let more blood into different parts of the body. So whenever you have an erection, you have nitric oxide that signals, hey, we need some blood down here, guys. And you get blood that rushes in. And one thing that happens as we get older, and by older, I mean really after age 20 or 30, is we stop being able to make as much of our own nitric oxide. So a lot of the problems that we see with sexual dysfunction in both sexes is just the lack of nitric oxide. You're ready, but you can't release enough nitric oxide to get the blood really to get into the area. So that's important because mouth taping, what it does is it forces you to breathe through your nose. And when you breathe through your nose, actually you're able to, there's some either in the sinuses or the back of the nose, you're able to release nitric oxide into those areas. And then when you breathe that air into your lungs, the nitric oxide is able to disseminate into the rest of your body. So there's studies with mouth taping that have shown that the nasal breathing will help with things like lowering your blood pressure and you know, helping with all different other kind of cardiovascular benefits. But a lot of those are probably due to nitric oxide, because nitric oxide is gonna, you know, if you have enough of it, it will lower your blood pressure, but it's also what causes you to have erection. So that was my friend. He's basically, you're breathing in all this good nitric oxide from your nose, and it's getting it onto your bloodstream, and some of it's going into your, you know, the pelvic area, and all of a sudden you've got nocturnal erections again, which are very healthy and what you do want to have.
Wow. Yes. I'm so glad you kind of explained that in a way that people can grasp onto, because it often can land as just like this fringe odd thing. But particularly then when you hear some of the benefits that you don't always hear, you know, maybe on the box of the mouth taping, you know, just that nocturnal erections could be a nice, happy benefit. Things of that nature can really help, you know, win people over to doing something that can take, it's an extra habit that many people find to be an extra step. And the other thing I wanted to check in with you on your website, you mentioned that around 40% of women have some degree of sexual dysfunction. And that's something I've found with a number of clients. I will have different female clients that because we do sort of this sleep sabotagers kind of list, and we have all these areas of life that are working and not working, giving self-assessments. And the fact that I have the sex as a category on there often kind of, you know, is alarming for people. And many people will, particularly women, almost have this resignation to the fact that, oh, for X reason, it's painful, it doesn't feel good, I just don't go there. There's all kinds of things that are heavy in nature around that topic. So I'm wondering if people are having some of these sexual dysfunctions, how they can, one, what steps they can take. I know that's, again, a broad question, but two, understanding what that might be doing to impact their sleep quality.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for sexual problems, obviously. You know, in women, it's usually either lack of interest or low libido. It's problems with arousal, so you just can't get kind of excited. It's pain or it's problems reaching orgasm. So it can be any of those four or a combination of those four. And it's pretty common. You know, about 40% of women at some point have some degree of sexual dysfunction. It doesn't always bother people. You know, some women are like, I could take it or leave it. But a lot of people, it does bother, and they just don't know how to approach it. So, you know, there's so many things that can cause sexual problems. It can be anything from how the stress that you're under that you're not really dealing with, to prior stresses, you know, sexual traumas in the past, you know, sort of spiritual traumas, if you will, or sort of guilt and things like that, you know, around your sexuality, to, of course, any physical problems, pelvic floor problems, like you don't have a lot of pelvic floor muscle strength, for instance, as you get older, hormonal problems, which happen, you know, in the 10 years or so before menopause, we start to have all these hormone shifts where you, all of a sudden, you don't have as much testosterone and you two have too much estrogen. And you know, there's all these kind of crazy imbalances that a lot of women don't know that we actually, you know, we can treat. That's not a big deal. We can give you some bioidentical hormones and it can make a huge difference. And all of a sudden, maybe you want to have sex again, and maybe, you know, maybe it's not painful anymore. And of course, there's other things, structural problems and things that require like an OBGYN to, you know, to do procedures and such. But there's a lot of different reasons for it. And I think that, you know, the first thing I would say is to go see a doctor and just make sure that you don't have anything serious going on, and then try to get to the bottom of it, because it is worth at least exploring as an, you know, these kind of things, so that you can decide whether you want to try to treat them or not. But sex, we know, not just in sleep, but we know that sex, a healthy sex life for both men and women, has been associated with, you know, improvements in cardiovascular disease risk, improvements in blood pressure, improvements in brain health. There's some studies in older people that have shown us that in older people who are sexually active have less cognitive decline as they get older. They have better memory. They have like better hippocampuses, and you know, and sex is contributing to that. And I'm not sure anyone really understands some of these exactly why that is, but that's definitely true. And then people who have a strong sort of a healthy sex life, either alone or with a partner, also tend to have less depression and anxiety. They have better self image, and all of that. And all of those things can feed into how you sleep, right? Like if you have a lot of depression and anxiety, then that's going to make you not sleep as well. Right? If you have other sort of health problems, maybe you aren't sleeping. If you're having a lot of social, like relationship problems because your sex is not very good and you're stressed out about it or it's not working really well, that also can affect how you're sleeping. So there are direct sort of connections as far as like when you have sex, the hormones do this and then you sleep better. But there are also all of these indirect connections where sex, you know, does X and Y, and then Y and Z contributes to sleep in this way.
Wow. Yeah. Really well said. I'm wondering if you could share, when we talk about sleep, people want to know what's normal, what's the normal amount of hours I should be getting, what should, you know, my sleep stages look like, what should my heart rate look like, all these things, what's normal? Is there any sort of even normal range that you can point to around for people? I'm sure it's a wide range, but is there kind of a normative thing that we could point to for health purposes around what we should be striving for, or could strive for in the realm of sex, even if it's alone or with your partner, and that can help us point to if we're kind of far off the mark that we might want to really focus on this area?
The studies that have been done with sex and looking at some of, you know, like cardiovascular disease risk and things like that, most of them are looking at a healthy sex life as having sex 1 to 2 times a week. And that's, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you should be doing, but that is kind of what's been studied. So I think that the most important thing to remember is that not to make this stress you out.
Yes.
Like not to make you feel inferior because you're doing it less or you're doing it more. Like this is not a perfect, like you should do it this way. That's just what's been studied. I think in general, people who, you know, tend to have more sex because they enjoy it and they're having fun and they have a good relationship, they tend to, you know, be happier than those who are not having it as much, but that's not always the case. Obviously, there are couples who, you know, they say that 20% of marriages are sexless at this point, or almost sexless. And if that's true, a lot of people are still very happy. So it's hard to, I never want people to feel guilt, more guilt.
Yes.
Like I feel like people already feel guilt for so many things. And I don't want to add to that, but 1 to 2 times a week is what has been studied.
Well said. Got that. Okay. And I like what you said too about kind of giving hope or possibility if people are having some of these, that sexual dysfunction, to consult with your doctor. I'm certainly getting the sense of, you know, creating that open communication so that you can get to the source of that and hopefully really make a difference with that. And that there's so much, as you spoke to, that you can certainly do. So as some of those things that you can do, so you pointed to different hormones. Is there kind of a rundown of some of the most common things that might come up that you'll help people with when they're having some of that dysfunction?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on with women, it's usually a lot of times low progesterone will actually cause problems sleeping.
Yes.
You probably talked about that before.
Big one, yeah.
And that can be, you know, especially with when they're still cycling, their, you know, hormones are kind of up and down, and lack of progesterone is a big deal. And of course, postmenopausal, all of the hormones drop. So progesterone, testosterone, estrogen, all of them go right down. And so adding in progesterone in both cases can be really helpful for sleeping just before bed. Other hormone, you know, but again, like estrogen has been shown to help with improving your REM sleep. So that's something else. You know, again, you don't tend to need extra estrogen unless you're postmenopausal, but once you go through menopause, definitely adding in some estrogen can be helpful for that. And then, you know, testosterone is interesting. A lot of women don't know that testosterone is even a thing that they have, but it is.
Yes.
And it's super important. It's important for sex drive, but it's also important for just motivation in general and decision making and being able to, you know, to burn fat and being able to, you know, to build muscle. And there's all kinds of things like that. And so all of those hormones can start to kind of fluctuate right in your kind of mid-30s-ish or so and start to go down and sometimes need to be replaced. And that can help with both sleep and stress. You know, I have women who can't sleep because they're having hot flashes, you know, all night.
Sure.
And they don't have enough estrogen or their balance is wrong. So, but those same hormones can also affect your ability to want sex and ability to have sex. So they go very much hand in hand. And if you flip it around, when you're sleeping is when you're, especially with testosterone, is when you're making a lot of your hormones. So yes, if you're not sleeping well, you know, we know testosterone needs a good 3 hours or so of good sleep in order for you to make testosterone. And so, especially in guys, we see, you know, people who are, you know, even a week of not sleeping more than 5 hours or so can reduce your testosterone levels by 10 or 15%. And that's just 1 week. And like, think what happens if it's over, you know, months or years. No wonder our overall testosterone in our population of men now is much lower than it was 50 years ago. Like, you know, we aren't sleeping as well. We are more stressed out. We are, you know, all these things that affect testosterone. So anyway, it kind of goes both ways with the hormones.
Well, I'm so glad you said that too, because I think a lot of people aren't as connected to how much testosterone and sleep are so intimately linked. And I think the more we can get that message out, the better, because, you know, it's often been some sort of narrative of, you know, the driven person gets up early, goes to bed late, all these sort of things. And we're actually finding kind of the flip on that.
Yeah.
So thank you for saying that. And as far as when we get into this, some of these hormone conversations, I've had different clients that will almost shirk away of like, oh, that sounds like that's going to be an expensive endeavor. This is going to mean a lot of testing, all those sort of things. Are there particular tests or companies that you recommend that can help facilitate this and make this easier? Or is it something that really, you know, you just got to bite the bullet, invest in a little bit of testing for your hormones, see where you're at, or do you recommend kind of continually taking a look at where those hormones are at?
I like to for people to get kind of a base level on their hormones, and they're maybe in your mid 30s or so when you're feeling pretty good. You know, get your sex hormones checked, and as well as, you know, thyroid and things like that. If you have a primary care doctor, you should be getting your thyroid checked periodically anyway. But I like to get like the other sex hormones checked as well. There's several ways you can do it. A lot of doctors, like myself, by one clinic, we actually take insurance. Even though we do a ton of hormone, we do bioidentical hormones. That's one of our main things. But because we feel like it should be a part of something that, you know, a care that anyone can receive, we take insurance for that. So we'll bill insurance for the labs, we'll bill insurance for the visit. So really it's not expensive any more so than, you know, any other doctor's visit. A lot of the hormone doctors and functional medicine doctors don't take insurance. And those guys, you know, are a little bit more expensive for sure to see the doctor. The labs themselves, you know, you can get salivary testing or urine testing for hormones somewhere in the probably $250 to $350 range with tests that, you know, you could even order yourself off of, like ZRT, for instance, has hormone tests, or the Dutch test. You know, there's tests you can do at home that if you would just want to check your levels and see where you are, you can do that. But I would just caution you that you need to know what to do with that then. And
yes,
sometimes, you know, it's oftentimes better to pay a little of money to go to an expert who knows what to make of all those crazy numbers.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Because I know that's been a stopping point for many people. They get the test. Oh no, now I know that X, Y, and Z, my progesterone's low, but then what to do about it. So I think you're very right on that point. And I actually wonder, I feel like you're pretty forward thinking. Do you see any future as far as in the sex tech arena, as far as health and well-being and relationship to making sex, even to having more of a pulse on where we're at with it? So for instance, I was earlier in the year, back when we used to have events, CES was one that I'd gone to that was just tremendous in the sex tech arena. It was the first year that they were allowed to have sex tech present. And like, you know, just it was huge, 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 very exciting stuff, you know, measuring the strength of orgasms, like you were kind of alluding to, and just really making this more of something that we can all be kind of speaking about and making more of a conversation piece. Do you see anything kind of coming or anything that exciting that you're using or know of that people can speak to that's kind of noteworthy?
I just looked at the sex tech world a few months ago, and I aside from the some of the ones like the Lioness and the ones where we can look at orgasmic strength, which I think is fascinating. I can't think of anything else sort of techie. There are some, you know, there's some good apps out there that have come out in the last couple of years that are sort of combination education slash, you know, kind of get you in the mood sort of apps. I think they can be really helpful for, especially for women who tend to have a little bit of a harder time kind of getting, you know, converting from like taking care of the kids, washing the dishes and going to work all day. And then, you know, trying to go to right to having sex. Like it's the mental part is so yes. important for us. So there's some of those apps are like, there's an app called Rosie that's new. That's really good. It's by Ryan, has an educational piece and there's videos and this is what's normal. This is what's not. But then there's also some ways to kind of help get you into the right mindset. So I like that some of those kinds of, you know, taking that sort of meditation mentality and applying it to sex and applying it to sexual sort of headspace as well. But I think there's definitely room for more. Like, I think that your point is well taken. There's so many now, so many devices that can track our sleep and it can track our steps, you know, and we can track like everything, but we're still not really tracking our sex and our sex lives. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity there because, as I showed earlier, it's hard to really study sex. It has been done, certainly, but it's hard to do. People don't want to fund it. There's a lot of like taboos around it. But if we can study it ourselves, on ourselves, then nobody gets offended and we still can learn some things.
So well said. So a couple of things just from working it into our lives. So now if we're to your point, yeah, thinking of it more, I think the same thing has applied to sleep in that for so long, it was an area that was a gray area. You know, you kind of knew how much you slept, but you know, it was foggy. I think I woke up, all of that. But now that we have all these different, you know, kind of trackers, we can start to put a little bit more numbers. And I think as years progress, we'll be able to have even more confidence around the quality of those numbers and what have you. To your point, yeah, there's still just sort of this a lack of knowingness of how often we're having it, what's normal, what's not normal. And I'm wondering with that, do you have recommendations for one, even from a strategic standpoint? I know Aliza Vitti is a speaker on kind of biohacking your rhythm and bringing in, and will recommend having more sex during the luteal period of for women that are menstruating to kind of help with added cortisol and kind of, you know, lower those kind of stress that you might be going through. Are there any sort of strategy that we could bring in to specifically almost use it as a aid to our health when it's maybe, you know, we're more stressed out than normal, starting to use sex in the same way we might, you know, like meditating or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any. I was just thinking that's a great strategy. I think anytime you're really stressed out, trying to calm down enough and get enough parasympathetic involved that you could have sex. And then because that will really help you then get to that next level of sort of calm and not stressed out. But it's difficult because in order to have sex, you actually have to be in that sort of rest and relaxed state. You have to be in the parasympathetic state. You can't be sympathetic overdrive, you know, cortisol through the roof, adrenaline through the roof. Like that fight or flight state is not conducive to having sex because you're fighting or you're flighting or whatever you're doing. Like you're not procreating when that's happening. And so it is, the first step, you know, is to get down enough of relaxation to be able to even have sex. And that's true for men and women. So I think that's the first thing is thinking about, well, how do I do that? You know, and that can be something as simple as breathing exercises. It can be journaling. It can be like, for me, I love going on walks outside in the mountains. And so, you know, not for all purposes, like I just love it. And so I'll go outside and go for walks in the mountains. And that's the way that I kind of keep myself on an even keel, or exercising, or, you know, there's several different things, but I think that, you know, creating a space for yourself to get yourself in that mood. And that's, you know, one thing is sort of keeping your bedroom, you know, reserved for sex and sleep, like you kind of alluded to earlier. And, you know, once you pass through those bedroom doors, like that's a no TV or no phone or no gadgetry zone, ideally. And I'm not perfect at this myself, but if you can create that sort of space where you walk into your room and it's like, and you can breathe, then that will start to trigger your head into really being in this more parasympathetic state. And that's going to be much more conducive to having sex at any point in that room than if you don't make it a safe space for that.
That makes a ton of sense. How about time of day? I've gotten this question a few times for, you know, so certain women will say then it amps them up and then they're not going to fall asleep after, or that the men will fall right asleep after? Is there any kind of science to that, of the kind of effects and strategy around timing?
Yeah, you know, I don't know for sure. I know that in the morning is when we we tend to see the highest testosterone levels, at least, or in the morning, because you've made them overnight. So for a lot of reasons, it makes sense to have sex in the morning, because that's when you technically could be sort of the most revved up if you've slept well, and if you're not getting up early to go do something, you know, else that you have to do. But men do tend to be able to fall asleep right afterwards, after sex, a little easier than women. But I still think that it really depends on the couple and kind of how, what their rhythm is. But as long as it's happening sometime, it tends to bode well for general health, relationship health, you know, emotional health, mental health, and sleep health.
Mm, so well said. Are there things that you are able to do with men specifically with their difficulties around sex? So if for them, if there's kind of some performance anxiety or any of these topics that are a bit more of the psychology, but wanting to ensure that we're, you know, still helping to focus on that area and to prioritize that area, but striking that fine line between, you know, not putting too much pressure. Are there things that you're able to help them with around that topic?
So I work with a lot of men with erectile dysfunction specifically, and just or sort of erectile less function, as I call it sometimes, where it's not necessarily dysfunction, but it's maybe not as good as they want it to be or as good as they're hoping. And that's sort of a big area of expertise of mine. And there are definitely some things that could be done. Certainly, you know, understanding how ED happens and understanding the causes of it, which is usually a vascular problem, usually a blood flow problem. But, you know, just understanding the things like the inflammatory processes that lead to ED. So, you know, basically everything that from eating too much sugar to smoking to high blood pressure to being overweight, not exercising, to too much stress, which causes your testosterone to come down, which causes you to not have it. You know, like there's all these things like that that can contribute to erectile dysfunction, hormonal imbalances as well, of course, but also that we actually have a lot of tools now that can help with those things. So whether it's replacing hormones, oftentimes testosterone, or getting increased nitric oxide from food, for instance, ditching your Listerine, getting rid of your antiseptic mouthwash, which is going to impede your ability to make nitric oxide from food. And nitric oxide is the main chemical, you know, that is going to open the blood vessels up so that you have that erection. So I tell guys to get rid of their Listerine and to use sort of a do-it-yourself mouthwash if they're going to do a mouthwash. That can help as well. The mouth taping is something else, again, increasing nitric oxide. And then there are a number of other sort of therapies and things that we can do. They can do some at home or in our office, like shockwave therapy, like Gainswave, which is a shockwave therapy that we do in our office. It's a non-invasive sort of treatment that you do, you know, a couple of times a week for a few weeks. They can make huge improvements in blood flow and blood vessel formation, and can create, you know, lasting changes that last a year or so to help improve the ability to get and keep blood into the area. Or some of the regenerative injections that I do with stem cells or PRP, where we're actually injecting into the penis as well. So there's a lot more than just Viagra now out there. Viagra still works and it's still great, and I have a lot of respect for it. So if you're having problems with erections, like, you know, you don't have to hide it. You don't have to worry about it. Like, just talk to a doctor who knows what they're doing, and we can actually oftentimes reverse it.
Wow. Very, very cool. And so do you have it too, that people can start to, when they're creating this dialogue and relationship with their doctors, that sign of low libido, really taking that seriously and starting to hone in on that, share that with your doctor, and starting from that vantage point, that it really, from a healthy functioning adult, that's something that we want to also maintain. It's really something that is a sign of solid health. So if that's off, it's a place to begin in kind of our quest for a healthy, fully functioning life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a libido, you know, is important. And again, there are some people who just don't really have interest in sex. And this is not me telling you have to be a certain way. But lack of libido, when you've had one before and you don't have a good reason for it to have gone away, is a sign that something is potentially going on, whether it's a hormone problem, whether it's what you're eating, whether it's some kind of environmental toxin, and what's, you know, whether it's a social emotional, you know, problem, a past trauma. Like, there's so many things that can cause that libido to go away. But if you never ask for help with what's, you know, if you don't ever talk about it and bring it to someone's attention, then you're never going to know what that reason is and be able to fix it. So I think that in general, as a culture, we just haven't talked about sex in a real sort of medical system way of, like, you know, until recently. Like, you know, we've always, if we have knee pain, we go to the doctor and, hey, say I have knee pain, can you help me? And if you didn't get help, you keep going to doctors. Like, you keep finding different doctors. Like, you keep asking them, hey guys, my knee still hurts. Like, why is no one addressing it? And you'd do your own reading, and you would dive into it, because that knee pain to you is important, and you want to fix it. And that's the same with everything. You know, that's the same with, if you had a headache, if, you know, essentially every organ system, if it's bothering you, you find someone that can help. However, I find that with the sexual organ system, unless you're having pain, a lot of people will just feel like it's normal, and or that people can't, no one can help me anyway, so why should I ask? And so they just don't ask, or they ask one person who doesn't really know how to do anything with it or how to treat it, or they just, you know, they can just give Viagra and that's it. But, you know, treat it like knee pain. Like, just keep after people and find someone who can actually help you, because there are people.
There are people. Yeah. And actually, it circles back nicely to kind of how you had began this conversation around sex and sleep being this area that's such a kind of signal for perceived overall healthy and fully functioning life. And it does seem like those are two very clear areas that for a long time have been sort of that same dead end approach, or sort of, you know, just resignation of, oh, I guess I'm not a good sleeper, or, you know, when the sex conversation, then I guess it's not for me. And yet it doesn't have to be that way. So I really appreciate you standing for raising the bar on this topic. So that's amazing. I've had sent to me a couple times this random different articles from Dr. Oz. This is such a mass conversation, but Dr. Oz suggesting that people should aim to have sex every single day, if possible, with your partner, and how that can really help warrant and stave off all kinds of different health problems. What do you think of things like that? Like, really trying to up level and make it like a daily goal? Do you think that's just silly and not something you should be striving for? Is there anything for you in your kind of personal goals of how often you see for frequency? Or do you think it just doesn't really apply in this conversation?
I think if you can have it every day, that's fantastic. And if you have a life that allows that, you know, if you have you have a job, if you have kids, if you have pets, if you have, like, I feel like there's so many variables that affect whether or not, like, this actually happens every day. And it could be like my dog in the bed who won't move, and I'm like, all right, fine.
But I love that. Very relatable.
I definitely think that in general, you know, more is probably going to make you happier. Like I said, in the beginning of every day, if you can get into a habit and make it, you know, make it a ritual, make it a habit, make it something fun that you're excited about, that every day is a good thing. There's, you know, it's funny. There are some, I've gotten into kind of discussions with, / arguments with like Dave Asprey before about this. That he, you know, because there's some people who talk about, you know, like semen retention and how you don't want to ejaculate.
Dopamine.
And there's definitely some sort of old texts that, you know, suggest that as you get older, you should ejaculate less often and such. I haven't found a lot of good evidence myself to support that, but there is some research that in men that more ejaculation actually, it reduces your risk for prostate cancer. So that is something that is possible, and you can, you know, men, you can use that as a
hey. Yes. If you loved me, then
you love my prostate. But you know, I wish that there was more information, and hopefully we'll learn more about the thing, but there's not all that much that tells us exactly how often and such, but
yeah. Wow. Well, you've given us, I think, a lot to think about, and really just making this connection with sleep. And, you know, partly why I'm asking so many specific questions is that oftentimes the people that I'll find coming, having sleep difficulties will either can often fall into the kind of that type A group of, okay, so what do I need? What's the prescription? What, you know, specifically spell it out for me. And I think you're providing this nice space of, it doesn't necessarily have to look like that, but by even bringing attention to this area to begin, by creating a relationship with your doctor, and if things aren't kind of working as well as they could, creating dialogue with your partner, really just putting the reverence for this area that, you know, really it deserves, and that there's a lot of really wonderful positive things that we can gain from this, and the prioritization of this can really reap rewards in both our sleep and then just our overall sense of well-being. So thank you so much for all this information. And so how can people follow you, learn more about what you're up to, all your great information that you're putting out there, and you have such a great candid way of just sharing, you know, just your passion for this. So how can they follow you?
On Instagram, I'm Dr. Amy B. Killen, and I'm pretty active on Instagram, as you mentioned. I'm also on YouTube at Amy Killen MD, and I put videos out there occasionally. And then my website, I have several websites, but the one I usually direct people to is dramykillen.com, and that one gives you some general information, and then I can kind of point you to the other various websites that I have for clinics and things like that.
So awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time, and just really appreciate all the, just the fun nature that you're bringing to this topic. And it really makes a big difference for so many people. And so I'm excited to continue to follow you and learn more.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.